But you might remember this time last year they brought in a new timetable and it was complete and utter disaster. So let's talk to Bruce Williamson this morning and find out whether things are any better. Bruce, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Well, just listening to the news headlines, we haven't heard anything about train chaos this morning, have we?
No.
So I think we can conclude that actually the rail industry have learnt the lessons from the fiasco of last year, and that the new timetable has been slipped in relatively smoothly. Which now, at last, it's nice to have a bit of good news, isn't it?
Well, it is nice to have a bit of good news, but of course it's tempered as well by some bad news, because there's always a bit of good and bad going on together. And while I'm very grateful and happy that it appears that we may have learned from our problems of last year, another figure has come out in which it says that in 2018, significantly delayed trains have accounted for around 4 million lost hours to train users. Now, it's hard to quantify that in my brain, so I'm going to ask you, I presume this means, and this refers to people being delayed getting to work, being delayed getting to school, being delayed just getting to general, you know, life as it goes on.
Yeah, all of those things, yeah. I mean, I think the benchmark is a significant delay is more than 29 minutes, and obviously a cancellation is pretty easy to define if the train doesn't turn up at all. It's been cancelled, and yeah, last year was a really bad year. There's no getting away from that. And the May timetable chaos that we all know about so well not only contributed to the sort of problems in itself, but there were huge knock-on effects. You may recall it took months to sort out those problems. So that largely explains it. But, you know, there's no excuse. It wasn't a great year for the railways last year.
It was not. And, I mean, the other thing we're hearing this morning, and I'm sorry to have a sort of slightly scattergun approach to the railway news today, but we're seeing a load of MPs who have apparently lost all concern for their senses and are urging the government not to give up on HS2, saying that it's going to be a fantastic thing, it's going to be brilliant, even though it's massively over budget and is not really required. They're saying, forget about all these other MPs who say that we should be concentrating more on local railway lines, let's push on with HS2, otherwise it will be a disaster for Britain.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because in these uncertain times, you know, it ties into the politics that we all know so much about. And who is going to be the next Tory leader? Boris Johnson, who is the front runner, but the front runner probably usually doesn't end up getting the job. He's stated in the past that he wants to scrap HS2. And there's quite a lot of grassroots Tory activists who think that it isn't
that it's not necessarily where we should be spending the money, I think, is their argument.
Yeah, you know, once the price goes up, the, obviously what you call the benefit-to-cost ratio goes down, and it becomes harder to justify. I mean, I, as a rail campaigner, don't want to present this in a sort of either-or thing. You know, we need the continued investment in the existing network, but we also need that extra capacity because we have a growing railway.
Yeah.
And there's no sort of do-nothing option. If you scrap HS2, you've got to come up with something else. But sadly, politicians have a very sort of short-term time frame, and rail projects, you have to think of them in the very, very long term.
Mm. Well, you do. But of course, one of the things we realised from last year's debacle over in parts of the north particularly was that, you know, there are very few really, really good rail services that go kind of east-west around the north of England. And a lot of people are saying that's really where money should be spent, because that's where local commuting is much more important than, say, for example, improving a rail line, which is a little bit quicker than the one that's already there, which is quite well used anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a very, very strong case for, you know, better connectivity across the north, because then you get the benefits of tying these major cities together, and the north as a whole then becomes a sort of massive economic powerhouse. So yeah, that investment definitely needs to happen. I mean, HS2 isn't about shaving a few minutes off the journey to Birmingham. It's all about capacity, you know, the fact that our existing network is clogged. So you've got to build a new line. And if you're building a new line, well, you might as well make it high speed, because that's relatively easy to do.
Except aren't we now hearing that they can't run it too high speed because that'll cost too much money?
Well, yeah. I mean, we need high speed. We don't need super high speed.
Right.
There's no point going more than about 200 miles an hour, because then you have to make super straight to super level track, and the energy costs go through the roof then. So, you know, 200 miles an hour is a sensible high speed for railways. It gives us all the benefits without too many of the costs.
Mm. And then you've got the old Oak Common problem as well, haven't you, where it's now coming into a part of West London, which is not really very close to Central London. So when you say you can get down there quicker, that's all very well, but then you're not actually anywhere you want to be. You still have to travel east into London.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously, we will have Crossrail up and running by then. And
you reckon?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You sound
yeah.
very confident.
Oh, I am, yeah. I mean, you know, that's, you know, two years away. You know, HS2 is 10, 20 years away, you know. Hmm. So there's plenty of time to sort
yeah,
out.
Yeah, but that's like there. Saying you can take the high-speed train up from, you know, from Europe, the Channel Tunnel train, and then come yeah. all the way up into Stratford, and then you're in great shape because then you can get another train. I mean, it all takes time, doesn't it? That's the
it
point.
Does, yeah. People don't like changing trains. So through services are important, yeah.
yeah.
And ideally, you want to go into central London and sort of connect to a great hub at probably King's Cross and Pancras that,
yeah.
and in Euston. That sort of serves everyone. But yeah, this is one of the cost-saving suggestions that's been put through, that we just take HS2 up to Old Oak Common and forget that very expensive tunnelling through central London to get to Euston.
Right. So when are you being told that Crossrail will actually be up and running? I think you and I had this conversation before when you said, well, some of it is.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to let you get away with just renaming bits of it. So I'm talking about when is it actually going to be possible to get a train from Old Oak Common to Stratford without having to change?
I think the current thinking is about 2 years. You know, let's be pessimistic. Let's say 3 years max.
Three.
Know? Yeah, but, you know, I think...
But wasn't it meant to be finished like last year?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Right.
Mike, the thing is, right... negative stories, aren't you?
I'm not. I'm just asking you to be as pessimistic as possible, and okay, you're doing that.
Possible, yeah,
and
three years,
for it to be 4 years late... and over budget. It's not something to be proud of, surely.
No, it's not. No, there has been definite weaknesses in the project management of Crossrail,
yes.
which you know, I think Transport for London have to take some of the rap for that.
Right.
But you know, pretty much always the buck stops at the very top, really.
It does. Well, I mean, you might make a case that you'll be riding on a train that's Crossrail proficient before we leave the European Union.
Stranger things have happened, yes. I mean, you know, as I said earlier on in the interview, we live in politically uncertain times. And,
true.
And no one can predict anything, really.
Right.
So, yeah, you might be right there.
But at least let's finish on the good news that the so-called new train timetable appears to have worked.
Yeah, I mean, there's been one or two problems in Scotland, but, I mean, yes, compared to last year, much, 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 much better. And you know... there are no headlines of chaos.
No, that's good.
A good thing.
So do you think they've actually just learned to get... Because the problems we had last year were not enough drivers that knew where they were going,
yeah.
not enough new trains that were set up in the right places on the day that the timetable changed. So they fixed all that, you think?
Yeah, I think there's two factors. Firstly, they certainly have learned the lessons, you know, and they've planned it a lot better. And secondly, they've bitten off a lot less this time. So they had a massive change last year in the timetables, loads of new services, loads of changes, whereas this year a little bit more modest changes, so the smaller changes are sort of easier to manage.
Right, okay. Well, listen, Bruce, delightful to talk to you as ever. Thank you very much indeed. Bruce Williamson there from Rail Futures, talking about some good things about the railways and some bad things, but certainly I would say...